Welcome to the Mile 99 interview series with your hosts, Greg Larkin, Mike Turner, and Jessica Harris. Enjoy this episode, and we'll hope to see you on the trails soon. Welcome, everybody. My name is Greg Larkin. I'm one of the co-hosts of the Mile 99 interview series, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mike Turner.
Hey, everybody.
And Jessica Harris.
Hi, guys.
And tonight we're recording a really special episode. It's the start of a new series within our normal podcast and interview series where we interview ultra runners live on Zoom. But as I mentioned in the trailer episode that I posted a little while ago, a few days ago, we reached out to a hiker out in New Hampshire, and her name is Rebecca Sperry. And as I talked about in the trailer episode, she's an avid hiker. She's been working on a really big hiking project in New Hampshire to do all of the trail miles in the White Mountain National Forest in under a year. And it's about a 2,000 mile effort and trek over many, many days and through lots of different weather conditions and all kinds of things. And so big effort on her part. And she had started that January 1st of 2020. And then in August, she was sidelined temporarily for this project by being diagnosed with breast cancer. So we had seen this happening kind of through her Instagram account, and then eventually reached out to her and asked her if she'd be interested in kind of expanding on her story. She's been really public about it on Instagram. And it was, you know, something that we thought would be really interesting to get information about and get out to the general public through our podcast. And a lot of what she does is very much in line with a lot of the ultra runners that we interview. And we thought it'd be a really nice thing to talk to her and get her story out there. So tonight is our first episode, actually talking to her live, live as we're sitting here. And we will be publishing these episodes over the next couple of months and just sort of like getting to know her, getting to know her story, finding out more and more about, you know, what her experience going through cancer surgery and treatment and that has been, and then also what all of her future plans are. So that's kind of the arc that we're thinking about over this period. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thanks. It's really cool to get to talk to you guys. I feel very humble about the fact that, well, you're ultra runners, and that's like the next level to me. I can't imagine ever doing some of the things I know that you guys do. So it's definitely like very cool that I get to talk to you guys, because I look up to a lot of ultra runners out here in New England and through the hiking community. So it's kind of neat to get to kind of pick your brains a bit and sort of see, I don't know, it's almost like talking to people that I look up to just because of their physical abilities. So I really appreciate you guys having me and reaching out to me. So if you want, I can give a little bit of an update about my current situation, sort of where I'm at in treatment.
Yeah, I think that would be great just to kind of set the stage for people and just to make people aware that, you know, you agreed to do this while you're in treatment, and that, you know, I think is significant. So yeah, it'd be great to kind of hear where, you know, where, how it started and where you are right now.
Okay. So, okay. Well, I was diagnosed with breast cancer on August 21st, I believe, officially, kind of. I got the call. They called me up on the phone and told me. Prior to receiving that, I was working on hiking all of the trails in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, and that is called redlining. Originally, my start date was January 1st. I actually was sidelined twice throughout this. I stopped originally in March because of COVID. So I had about 8% complete. I had to stop because I couldn't keep hiking up north because we weren't really supposed to be traveling. So I stopped. I started again at 0% on June 19th, actually. So June 19th to August 24th. First-ish, I was redlining, and I did 18% of the guidebook in that amount of time. And my goal was to do it in a year. So I restarted on June 19th, meaning my year would end June 19th of the following year, which is fine. Like I come to terms with the fact that I had to start over once, you know, I realized it was just a better, I couldn't keep driving north with what was going on because I live in Manchester. So it wasn't right. So anyways, I restarted, hiked all summer, was hiking. I actually was on trail when I called my doctor to make the appointment. My husband found the cancer and I didn't know what it was. And honestly, I never in a million years would have thought I'd be diagnosed with cancer, especially because not a single, basically none of my family members have cancer. It's not something that's prevalent in my family. So I felt like something was wrong and it didn't seem right, even though I was like kind of telling myself it's not cancer, because it's never whatever, whenever you go for things like this, it's never that typically. Like usually you're not diagnosed with these things. So I had walked into it thinking, well, you know, something feels off about it in my vibe. Like I had like a vibe about it, but at the same time, I was kind of like, it's not going to be cancer. I'm 37. No one in my family has cancer. So I went in on August 17th and I met with a nurse at my primary care doctor's office. She felt the lump and then she said it was suspicious feeling. So she wanted to make an appointment for me to go see the breast health center at the local hospital to get a mammogram. So I went over there same day. At 1 o'clock, my appointment was scheduled and I went over with my husband and he wasn't allowed in because of COVID. So I was by myself for the entire probably like 4 hours almost to get everything all done, because I had multiple mammograms and an ultrasound that day. And it felt wrong and it felt suspicious, just like the way that the technicians act. They don't really talk to you as they're going through the procedures. They don't tell you what they're seeing. So it just seemed off. And by the end of the day, I was told that I had a BI-RADS 5, which means 90% chance that it was cancer. That was the first time in my life that I've ever like not slept all night because I was terrified of facing the future. It was horrible. Like I genuinely, the diagnostic process is horrible. I would not ever wish it upon anybody. And it lasted about a month. So basically, I guess I'll fast forward through all of that. I don't know if maybe we can talk about that whole thing at a later episode, but currently I just had my fifth round of chemotherapy today, this morning. I'm receiving one chemotherapy drug and one immunotherapy drug weekly for 12 weeks. So I'm a little bit foggy, a little kind of, my brain's a little slower right now because my, pre-meds are wearing off. So my steroids wearing off, but, I'm excited to talk to you guys about this. I can talk a little bit more about my pre-cancer life if you'd like, and where I grew up and everything.
Hey, Rebecca, this is Mike. It sounds like the care part of healthcare, it sounds like during those, when you're, you know, given this information, it's so life-changing. It sounds like it was very uncomfortable and uneasy. And it seemed like there was a lack of care or the human aspect of the healthcare when it was presented to you. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think part of that is the fact that we're going through COVID. So I'm not allowed to have anybody with me for any of my treatments. And every hospital or facility is handling things a little differently. The place I'm seeing, the place that I'm going to receive chemo, my husband was only allowed to go to the very first appointment. And everyone since then, I have to go on my own. So, and I'm kind of a little nervous because in New Hampshire, at least today, we just received information that they're kind of starting to really crack down again. And I'm concerned about how that's going to impact my treatment because I don't want to have to stop treatment because of COVID. I want to get this done. But yeah, it's difficult. And one thing that I wish that I had heard previous, like back at the beginning, this person online told me that the doctors treat the illness and the nurses treat the patient. So you can't really, I try not to fault them for being essentially heartless in how they handle their diagnosis, because I do think a lot of that has to do with the fact that that's just how they have to do their job. And the nurses are awesome. They're all wicked caring and they're all like kind of there for you, going through this with you. The doctors basically are there to like do the diagnosis, do the treatment regimen, and then they just like kind of go off and that's it.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I see the challenge with COVID. It's really, I mean, life goes on. I mean, we have to keep moving forward and it's just a very challenging time. I want to go back a little bit and explain redlining because I'm actually new to that. Sure. And I've only learned about it through you. Never heard of it, but I kind of get the idea. But maybe briefly kind of chat about what that's about.
Sure. So redlining is now, this is how it's, this is how it is defined up here. I'm sure it's probably the same everywhere. If there is other places that do it, New England or New Hampshire, we're very like list-aholic up here. So we tend to have lists for everything. Redlining is kind of like the, I would say redlining and the grid are the two top things that you do as a hiker up here that are like the best of the best are the ones who accomplish those goals. I believe there's only around 60 something people who have ever redlined New Hampshire officially. So that's like barely anybody. Redlining is hiking every trail in a specific edition of the White Mountain Guidebook. And that includes all spur trails that go to campsites, viewpoints, any trail that's listed, you have to hike. And there's honestly, the number that they'll give you is around 650 trails, but that's really not an accurate number because there are more than that. They're just not listed on a spreadsheet that was created by a hiker that is posted on the redlining website that a lot of people use to track their redlining. It's not intended to be the end all be all. The guidebook is the end all be all. So it's really important that you focus on what's in the guidebook versus what's on that spreadsheet. It's a very like, it's not really just about hiking. It's about planning and it's about getting to know the White Mountains, like in and out. And especially being kind of very meticulous about what you're doing because you technically aren't supposed to miss any pieces of trail. You have to make a good faith effort to hit every piece of trail. So that includes like, you know, a 50 yard spur trail to go see a viewpoint. You have to hit that. It's really, it's like a very difficult thing to kind of, accomplish if you want to do it right. And in a short amount of time, most people spend their whole life working on this goal.
Wow. That's great. It's interesting, idea. I'm doing something like that. I have a book out here in the North Fork American River that I'm actually trying to do every run in this book. So I guess I'm essentially redlining this guidebook myself. It's pretty fascinating. So it sounds like you have a real love for the outdoors and nature. I mean, is that when you were young, was that part of your growing up? I mean, maybe dig into a little bit like how you grew up and how you got into the love for the outdoors.
Sure. So, I grew up in New Hampshire. I've lived here my whole life. My parents are both, my dad died when I was 9, but before he died, he was really, really, really big into hiking as well. My understanding is that he hiked a lot in the White Mountains and he was particularly fond of certain trails. And my mom would go along with him on some of those hikes because they were married when I was really little, but then they got a divorce. As a kid, when I was in middle school, my mom would take us on hikes and I hated it so much. I'm very not non-athletic. I'm very much like a bookworm and I just want to sit and read and I'm really good at school and stuff like that. So hiking was never a part of my life other than being forced to go on hikes as a child to hike like these small peaks that everybody takes their kids on. As I got older, I was really busy with school and work. And then in 2015 is kind of what I consider my start date of hiking officially. So between 2008 and 2015, I hiked maybe more than a half dozen, maybe like a dozen times with my spouse on hikes that are kind of like popular up here. And then that was it. We kind of stopped hiking together because he's busy, I'm busy. You know, it was just kind of a weekend thing that we did. Well, then 2015, I decided one day I want to go on a hike. And he did not want to go with me because he was tired because it was the weekend and he was exhausted from work. So I was like, well, I'm going to go on my own. So I decided for the first time ever to hike by myself. And it was the best experience. And honestly, like that started this whole path for me. I hiked Mount Major, which is really not a big mountain. And honestly, there's a lot of people that hike it. So I wasn't really alone, but I don't think I stopped smiling the entire day because I just felt so empowered as a woman to be by myself in the woods and to be doing this by myself. And I was hooked. That was it for me. So I can talk, if you want, I can tell you a little bit about like how things progressed after that.
I'm interested to see. It sounds like it's fascinating. You hiked with your father was a big hiker and he had a love, and I can just imagine you out there as a young woman, just, you know, appreciating, like seeing what he saw and mm-hmm. the trails that he was on and just being in the same place in the same space. It's just it's a really nice thing to do. And I see how that can give you a lot of, you know, feeling inside, you know, but yeah, do explain kind of, so you started hiking alone and then how did that turn into this giant redlining project? It's a big step.
Yeah. So, in 2015, I worked as I'm up until June of this year, I was special educator for 7 years and that was my career. I still love being in special ed. I ended up leaving the field because I wanted to pursue additional education as, working on another master's degree. And unfortunately, the classes that I needed to take are offered during school hours. So I had to make a choice between pursuing this new career path or working and not. So, you know, talk about it with my husband and we agreed I would do this. So I stopped being a teacher officially, I guess, June of this year, which is very weird because I still feel like I'm a teacher. I feel like I'll never not be a teacher. But in 2015, I ended up starting hiking because I was not renewed in my contract at a public school that I worked at because they were reducing staff and it broke my heart. This was like my entire life, my passion up until that point, working with kids with autism specifically. And I had designed a program for these kids at this particular school district that had to cut funds and had to cut my position as well as someone else's. So it was kind of like a really awful experience because I lost my identity in losing that position. So that's when I kind of turned to hiking. So hiking Mount Major, I was just, I felt powerful and strong and, you know, proud of myself. And then I hiked, I think, 8 mountains that summer. And then the next year I decided, okay, well, you know, what else can I do? What else is out there? And it's kind of like a wormhole where you go down this thing and the next thing you know, at least for someone like me, because I'm very type A personality, it was like, okay, well, what else is out there? What are these lists that exist? So of course I discovered these lists about hiking all the 4,000 footers in New Hampshire and I was addicted instantly. So then my goal the next year, you know, I want to hike all the 4,000 footers now. And 2016, I did 48 peaks. And then in 2017, I did, I think 108. And then like every year it's gone up. I'm at 146, I think right now, which is really not that much considering, but I had to stop because of cancer. But yeah, it became this addiction and I went from wanting to hike all of the 48, 4,000 footers, which I did in 2018. I'm on round 4 of that now to hiking all of the highest peaks in New England. So I finished that in 2018 as well. And then the next step is usually you go and do 100 highest peaks in New England, which there are a lot of bushwhacks involved. I'm on 77 of 100 for that list, but I stopped because then I started getting into redlining. And redlining is like, for me personally, it's the best thing because I like to hike solo and I advertise that I exclusively hike solo, because I get a lot of people who want to hike with me and I feel bad because I like to be alone in the woods. It's just my time to kind of just decompress and focus on myself. So I hike solo. I've only done 14 hikes in the last 5 years with other people. And typically that's with my mom because she'll want to go on a hike, so I'll take her. But yeah, I became really into redlining last year, actually. And then it just became this addiction, sort of, especially because I also like doing research. So it really plays into that part of my personality as well, because you have to do a lot of research and a lot of like planning to get this done and to do it right.
I have a question. For redlining, do you have to do it solo?
No. That's just me being kind of, I'm going to set this arbitrary goal for myself. I'm going to hike it within a set time frame just because I feel like picking a time frame. So I picked a year. It was truly just like an arbitrary goal. And I'm going to do it solo because, which I have actually not really, I have hiked, I did one hike with one other person this summer because I needed to have someone with me for these. Some of the trails are really sketchy and I just didn't feel like it was a safe choice. So the solo piece is more just because it's easier. It's more convenient. I like it. But the doing it in a year was more or less an arbitrary goal just to set a time frame for myself. And because technically no other woman has done it within a year, I would be setting an FKT. It was kind of like an unintentional FKT. Two other people have done it in under a year and they're both men. One did it in 2013 and one did it this summer. And typically people spend their entire life working on this goal. So yeah. So redlining is kind of my thing. It was my thing up until I got cancer, basically.
And I mean, this is a big project. So have you thought about, is there any other place that you're going to do after this? Because I already know you're going to finish it. Where else are you going?
Well, so the reason I started the goal to begin with is because this past year, like not 2020 school year, but the 2019, the beginning of the school year, was awful. There were some major changes made at my school, the way it was being run. It was just my blood pressure went up like 30 points, which is like really bad. So I was freaking out at work. I was just really stressed and I needed something to like focus myself on that wasn't school so I could like not have a mental breakdown. And I decided, okay, I'm going to make this really, I was already redlining just for fun, like working on this goal. I was like, okay, well, this would be very distracting sort of, and also fun. I wonder if anyone's ever done this in under a year. And so then I wrote about on the Facebook page for redlining. I asked that question and I was told there was one guy who did it. So I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. So maybe I'll try doing, let's see if this is even possible. So that means planning it. So October of last year is when I started officially like really planning it. And like, it's a lot of work. And I stopped at, there's 12 spreadsheets that you use to kind of wrap your head around all the trails. And I stopped after a couple spreadsheets because it was so overwhelming. And I was like, there's no way this is possible in a year. And then of course I couldn't just give up because that's just how I am. So I went right back to it a couple of like days later and just kept working on it again. So it took me months and I'm still like, I just now revisited it and I have a 2.5-inch binder full of maps. But I revisited it and kind of went through and made sure I have everything. It's very like, you have to really almost keep checking and rechecking as you're doing it because you don't want to miss anything. So it's kind of been an ongoing project. And so then I got diagnosed with cancer and I'm like, I have to stop doing this. This is no longer, I can't keep redlining and set this goal. And I was kind of just thinking a lot. And I ended up thinking to myself one day, well, you know, maybe I could try redlining more than just New Hampshire's White Mountains because, you know, there's a lot of other trails out there that I want to see. And there's local trails closer to my house that maybe I could, you know, see those trails too. And so I decided that I'm going to attempt to, and it's going to take more than a year for sure, to redline Northern New England, which in my mind, because this is something no one's done. There's no like spreadsheets for anything, but the White Mountains, everything else I have to create spreadsheets for. So I decided, well, let's see, what do I want to do? I'll do Vermont because I love Vermont. I'll do Southern New Hampshire because there's a guidebook for that. And there are people who redline that. And I'll do Maine. So I've started working on kind of the research piece of figuring out how I would do this, which I've already done this part before. So I know how to do the research. I know how to make the spreadsheet or, you know, design the hikes. So I've started working and I've done part of Vermont. And so far that's all I've gotten to because I'm also in grad school. So I don't have a lot of time right now mentally to devote to planning out all of these hikes and designing spreadsheets. But once I'm done school in a couple of weeks, I will probably start really focusing on getting the planning part down.
We talk a lot on this interview series about goal setting. So much, and how that can help us get through really tough things. And that's nice to see that you're still making big goals, even though you are in the middle of a big goal. I love that so much. So can you walk us through a day in the life of, how do you pick your hikes for the day? How many days are you active while you're in treatment? Can you kind of talk to us about that?
Sure. So like a day in the life of me currently.
Mm-hmm.
Not okay. All right. So today is day one of a cycle of chemo. So the way chemotherapy works is you have yucky days. I call them yucky days in my regimen. So everyone has a different chemo regimen. And that's something that I definitely think needs to be kind of, people don't know this if they're not in it. I'm currently getting weekly chemotherapy, and a lot of people that are receiving chemo receive a round of chemo once every 3 weeks because they're receiving a higher dose of the drug and they need more time to recover. So I've basically planned out in my head how my week goes because I have to do it this way because I'm in school and I've discovered I have a finite amount of energy physically and mentally to get through a week. So today is day one. I received my chemotherapy in the morning. I know day one, I usually feel pretty good. So I've told myself, so this goes back to goal setting. My goal through chemotherapy is to hike at least one mountain every week and to do 5 days a week of exercise. And that doesn't mean I have to like raise my heart rate. It just means maybe going for a walk for an hour, but it's some form of physical exercise every day for 5 days of the week, because there's a lot of research out there that says that exercise can help with not just the symptoms of chemotherapy, but also with making it so you're less susceptible to have recurrence of cancer. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't have the energy or maybe don't know if they should be doing any sort of physical activity. So they typically don't. A typical day for me today is different than tomorrow. Every day I have to decide based on how I feel, what I'm doing. I know that I feel awful on Saturday and Sunday, so I have intentionally made it so I don't have to do physical activity those 2 days or schoolwork, because my brain is usually the part that is like just dead. But on every week so far of chemo, I've done 5 days a week of exercise and I've hiked at least one mountain every week, usually two. I usually do two hikes a week. So my days where I feel the best are usually Monday. I'll start to come out of the fog a bit. And in the afternoon on Monday, I usually feel pretty sort of normal. Tuesday and Wednesday are my days where I try to hike. Tuesday has been the day I've been hiking because I have blood draws on Wednesday, which means I have an hour and a half of time at the oncologist every day or every Wednesday. So I don't have the time necessarily. But like last week I did Pierce, which is a 4,000 footer on Wednesday, and I did Mount Major on Tuesday. So I did two hikes back to back. And this week I hiked Tuesday. I did Mount Gunstock Mountain and Mount Roe, which are right next to each other. And
I saw that. And you said that was your first time bagging two peaks instead of one in a day.
Yeah. So
congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. I was really excited. And it's honestly, if you know the area, it's not a huge deal. It's like 2,000 feet elevation over the course of 7 miles, which, you know, 7 miles is to me a nothing, and 2,000 feet is nothing. But I try to remind myself that, like, okay, you're going through chemo, you have to give yourself a little bit of credit for doing that. And it just feels good to be out there. I don't ever want to have to give it up. So I also am trying to push myself, because a little bit more maybe than most people who are going through a chemo regimen, is partially because I came from, like, I was doing 10 to 15 miles a day with 4,000 feet elevation gain every day, you know, like 30 plus days of the summer I did that. And plus I drove to all the trailheads every day and hiked. So it was like 4 hours of driving plus hiking all day. And so I'm used to kind of this really high level of exercise. And then to go from that to doing a 7 mile hike feels like nothing. And I'm trying to remain in as good shape as I can, so that way when I'm done chemo, I can start as soon as I can on redlining again.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You're sort of like going right into it smoothly,
yeah,
as opposed to just going from like nothing back up to that high level, I guess.
I think you guys probably understand maybe more than some people who aren't super big into exercise, that like, to maintain the level of fitness that I was at, you have to continually do it. You can't stop really for long periods of time, because it's really hard to get back to that level again. It's like you have to constantly be training almost. So for me to take that much time off to do a 12-week chemo regimen and not do any activity is out of the question. And I've had some people get concerned about what I'm doing, because they think, well, how can you be doing that? Or why are you doing that when you're going through chemo? It's like, I wish that I could get people to understand that, like, where I came from was so much more extreme, that this seems like nothing for me. And I'm actually trying to be cautious, believe it or not. Like, this is me reeling it in and keeping it at a more safer place than I would probably go to if it wasn't for the fact that, like, I don't want my family worrying about me.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense. I mean, it seems like you've found the balance as you've gone into this whole process. And I can definitely appreciate that, you know, just sort of listening to yourself every day. And it sounds like it's an everyday thing. I mean, it's like you, to me anyway, it sounds like you wake up and you kind of evaluate and kind of, yep, go from there every day.
Yeah, it's very, and the odd thing is you don't know what you're going to react, how you're going to react every week. So it's all a mystery. Like, I just got chemo today. I have no clue how I'll feel tomorrow morning. Mm. Normally I self-evaluate a lot on how I feel. So, normally throughout the past 4 weeks, a Friday would be not a big deal day. I'd be fine. But last week I was like dying on Friday. And then the week prior on Saturday and Sunday, I felt great, when normally I feel crappy. So it truly is like a constant self-evaluation that you have to kind of reflect on how you're feeling and give yourself like a little bit of time to kind of relax. So for me, the thing I've struggled with mostly with chemo is not really the physical exhaustion. It's the mental exhaustion. So they talk a lot about chemo brain and the way you feel when you're going through chemotherapy. Typically you're just so tired and you can't get enough sleep. And even when you sleep, you're still tired after. That hasn't really been the way I've been dealing with it. For me, it hasn't been that way. I've been dealing with a lot of like mental exhaustion, and it's not really like that I need to sleep. It's that I need my brain to sleep. So like, I'll just lay in the bedroom on Saturday and Sunday a lot of the time and just like have no sound, but not sleep, because my brain needs to rest. It's really frustrating because I've never struggled with like a cognitive impairment or having any sort of like sensory issues. And now that's really difficult for me because I am used to having a brain that works really good. And now, like, for example, this morning I forgot to take my medicine and I didn't realize that I did. I put it on the bed and then I came home this evening and I saw it sitting on the bed still and realized I hadn't taken it. So I'm getting very forgetful, which is very frustrating. And it's hard because these are important things I can't be forgetting.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely just want to say, you know, we all appreciate the fact that you're taking the time on this day. I mean, it's late where you are right now, heading towards bedtime. So, you know, it's absolutely something that we appreciate you making the time for. So, Rebecca, one thing I was interested in was, do you have any odd, interesting, funny stories about hiking maybe over the past couple of years?
Yeah. So, well, one particular story comes to mind where I kind of overdid it where, okay, so for redlining, I have so much time to finish this in. I've got to really get it done. You know, I'm really pushing myself. I hike all winter as well. And I do hike solo in the winter, which I know some people are probably cringing right now, but I typically go on trails that there are people. Well, I was redlining last winter and it was probably actually late February, early March, which is still winter up here. And there's two particular 4,000 footers I needed to do. There is a trail that I needed to hit that I had read a recent trail report. It said that it had been recently broken out, which is fine, except there's a lot of above tree line area, which means it was very wind blown. So I decided this particular hike I was going to do, I hiked up, I got to the peak. It was very windy. It was very cold. It was probably like, I want to say zero or less with the wind chill. I got up to the top of the peak. I ended up kind of pushing forward, you know, a little bit apprehensive because I knew there wasn't going to be any other hikers once I hit the other side of this mountain because of the weather conditions. But I was very dead set on, I need to get this trail in because I have to finish redlining. So I ended up continuing and I got to below tree line, or actually right at tree line. And there was no trail because it was all windblown. And I had no clue where to go. And I think if I had been in a more calm mental state, it would have gone differently. I would have processed it differently. But I was very anxious and very overwhelmed. And I ended up essentially having a panic attack on the side of the mountain. And I didn't know what to do. I was terrified because I didn't want to have to reclimb this particular peak. I was really tired and hungry. And I was very close to hitting the SOS button on my Garmin. I did not end up doing that. I called my husband and I happened to have service. And he talked me down and kind of got me to kind of refocus my brain. But I ended up rehiking up to the top of the peak and going back down and retracing my steps. So I didn't really meet my goal of hiking that trail, that particular hike, because I had to turn around. But it was kind of like a real eye opener for me about how far I was pushing things sort of and whether that was a safe choice. But it also helped me to kind of reassess my ability to handle stressful situations and kind of like reflected at, you know, after the fact and thought, was I really in danger? Did I really need to hit SOS? No, I just needed to kind of buck up and climb back up that stupid mountain. So for me, it was kind of just a very humbling moment and definitely always will stand in my mind as probably the scariest moment I've had on trail.
Which mountain was that?
It was actually Eisenhower, one of the 4,000 footers.
That mountain is no joke. I mean, it's very, very bare at the top and you're up there in the presidentials. I mean, that's, yeah. So for anybody listening that's not familiar with the New Hampshire White Mountains, I mean, it's a low mountain range compared to maybe the Rockies or the Sierras or such, but it does have the distinction of being some of the world's worst weather. I mean, that's kind of the moniker for Mount Washington, the tallest mountain up in that area at 6,288 feet, world's worst weather. And many people have perished on those mountains. And you really weren't that far from the peak of Mount Washington being on Eisenhower. It's pretty serious stuff up there. And, I think sometimes, yeah, people do underestimate it. Sounds like you got through it fine. And as you said, like it gave you a new appreciation for, you know, what it could be like up in there and just sort of how to handle those situations. So I'm glad you processed through that and got out of that one.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I've had a couple of interesting experiences up there when I lived up in New England, so definitely can understand that. Well, you know, I feel like we've gotten to know you a little bit here. It's been really great to kind of hear your story, both pre-cancer, during cancer, going through your treatments, just kind of getting a little bit of a feel for, you know, who you are and what drives you. And, you know, some of the things that we talked about, just it's been helpful to understand kind of like what your goals have been. And, you know, we're definitely going to be digging a lot into what your goals going forward. And we touched on that a little bit as well. But certainly we'll dig into that more as we do more episodes. So, yeah, I just really want to, on behalf of all of us, just really thank you for taking the time. And for everybody that's listening, just be aware that we'll be releasing these episodes on a frequent basis. We're going to be skipping next week. It's going to be Thanksgiving week, but our plan is to be recording on generally during the week. And then we'll, as we mentioned during the trailer episode, be publishing new episodes on Sundays around 5 o'clock Pacific time. So look for those. And we'll definitely be digging in more with Rebecca and learning all kinds of things about, you know, her accomplishments, her goals, you know, mental health issues that you might be having through cancer treatments, and definitely getting into just, you know, nitty gritty, like about gear that she uses and all kinds of other interesting things that people can apply to their own endeavors. So thanks again. This has been the Mile 99 interview series with our special mini series, Rebecca Redlines Cancer. Visit us on our Facebook page, the Mile 99 Interview. We have an Instagram account as well at the Mile 99 Interview. And if you didn't have enjoyed this episode, why don't you go over to Rebecca's Instagram? It's called Socked In Hikes. And she also has a website, sockedinhikes.com. And we'll be sure to add those to the show notes as well, so you can find those all easily. And join us again next time. Thank you very much. Have a good night.